This is episode 46 of Up on Foil, the podcast where we talk all about foiling. Today, I have Mike Yoker with me, and I'm just going to introduce us real quick. I'm Matt, father of three. I'm an average foiler, and I have this podcast since last October. And with me here is Mike Yoker. He started the Stand Up magazine. You've probably seen him on YouTube, wherever something is happening with foiling, up. Whatever, he's there with a mic interviewing and sharing the passion. So cool, Mike, that you take your time. Thank you so much. Is there anything you want to add right away?
No, I think that's, yeah, no, you're right. I try to be wherever I can and cover SUP, wing, and foil.
That is super cool. Awesome. And we see that when we watch your videos. And I'm super curious how that started, how you actually managed to do that lifestyle. I mean, you have to earn money. You're traveling a lot. And we're going to get all into that. And maybe you can just tell us how you started with water sports. Did you start with SUP, or what was your start into water sports?
So this whole story dates back to actually my life in Switzerland, where I grew up. And was in my teenage years, young adulthood, I was a skateboarder from not the first day, but from when that second wave of skateboarding came to Zurich. As a 14-year-old teenager, I got sucked into skateboarding hard. And shortly thereafter, I became a snowboarder, being inspired by the Swiss pioneers of snowboarding, and started that lifestyle and was a competitive snowboarder long before there was an Olympic or super pipes or anything. So board sports really was fascinating. At the time, there was windsurfing was really big, and all these, that image of windsurfing and those beach guys in Hawaii and wherever, they were windsurfing with the waves and the board shorts and the blue waves. It was just, it really inspired me a lot. And then and surfing, every once in a while, you could get your hand on a surf magazine and you see guys getting barreled and you see that. And I was like, I have to surf. And that, if that's the last thing I ever want, is like, I want to surf, nothing else other than surf. So that was the big dream before I was around 18 21 years old. And then after education and the Swiss military service, I decided to put everything aside, and I took my savings and I started a journey around the globe to fulfill my dream and not come back to Switzerland and surf as much as I possibly can. That can fill a whole podcast on its own. But long story short, I found my way to Hawaii and I met my future wife, which then led to now 23 years here on Maui, which now ties into the question on how did everything start. So I want to say, the philosophy with SUP back then was, it was something brand new. I was a surfer. I could care less. But we saw SUP coming along, and particularly with protagonists like Laird Hamilton and Dave Colomo, Robbie Nash, who were really pushing this. It was kind of like, crazy thing that these guys are doing. Around 2005, I want to say, I was in around 2008, I started the paddle with my first downwind paddle. And a kind of a light went up. It's like, wow, this is like this rugged sea and the wind and the gnarliness of an open ocean in a relative safe environment, doing a Maliko run parallel to the shore, maybe like kilometer and a half offshore, not more. It felt just so good. It filled the void of the lack of summer waves, and you're gliding on these waves, and I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And so at the time, of course, you know, like no social media much, so you didn't really know what was going on elsewhere. And then I was on a trip in Switzerland in 2009, and I was at the freestyle.ch in Zurich, and they had an SUP race.
Nice.
And I was like, are you kidding me? So I hooked up with these guys there immediately. There's still a video on YouTube on that, by the way, if you can dig it up. But there's a YouTube video on that. And so I was like, wow, this is really happening. And then something clicked in me also, because I was always a denier with the snowboarding, that this is going to become an Olympic sport and that this is going to become big, because back in 1995, 92, in that area, or even like as a kid, didn't even thought about it. But it was such a counterculture that there's no way this is going to get mainstream. And I have a few friends who actually made a career and a good life out of their snowboarding. And I was always kind of like, you know, if I would have believed in that, maybe I could have done that too. So I was like, okay, let's do something with SUP. And at the same time, I was in Germany in 2010 with my business partner, and we just started our skateboard longboarding company and had
our
first.
What's the name of that company?
Yukur Hawaii here.
Nice. Nice.
So we started that, and we were at the ISPO, and we already had some SUPs there at the ISPO as well. And paddles that we sourced like pretty fast because we saw like there was nothing happening in Europe. And then my business partner kind of had also the ideas like, hey, you know, I know this guy in South America that does a free magazine, and he does finance it through advertising and then distributes it to shops, and it's free for people to read. So we're like, okay, cool. Let's do something like this. That's a good idea because then we can market our skateboard, longboards to this new evolving group. So it was supposed to be like a marketing tool. It's like, okay, great. This is a new sport that's happening. We're doing our board so we can create our own communication for this new group of people who are excited about board sports. So this is kind of like the idea I left in January of 2010 and came back to Maui. And I started to research, okay, so how am I going to do SCP, a magazine in paper? And I really fastly realized there it's really hard to do that. It's a lot of work. It's really hard. But at the time, WordPress just became a thing, and it was really easy to start your own. And after doing research on the German market, I realized there is not a single website, besides two kind of people's blogs, that are actually talking about SUP. And I'm like, well, instead of doing a print magazine, let's do a website. So I started piecing together a website, and I was shooting content with my wife at the beach, like explaining the sport. How do you hold the board? How do you walk into the water, kneeling down, you know, holding the paddle? And of course, I was lucky because at the time here, it was the epicenter. Everything was here. We had Kai, Connor, Kane. All these guys were teenage kids, and races are starting to happen. We had a downwind races at Maliko. Everybody was surfing on SUPs. There was a subsurf contest. I mean, it was full on happening, and I was in the middle of it.
Were you just documenting or taking part as well in the races and the training and whatnot?
So I have always been the guy that I don't like people that write and talk about things they don't do themselves. And I've always rather be an athlete than just a bystander. So I participated in every race that was here. I participated in. I did two channel crossings here on an SCP. The surfing part was kind of like depending, because then I definitely still a rather kind of shortboard. But on given days and given conditions, I was jumping on an SCP. So yeah, no, I was in the thick of it. It was great. And doing downwinders is absolutely is the best.
So cool. So cool. Can I just ask, because that was like 5 years after when you got to Hawaii, right? So you have this like 5 year gap between starting the magazine and arriving in Hawaii, more or less.
So
what
I arrived,
did you do in between?
So I arrived, I got married in 2002. And I was here. So when I first came here, I was working at a hotel. I was having a career. I was going just normal person going on a job hunt. And I started a career in a hotel. I became a manager there, like a front desk manager. And then came 2008. And it was a big financial crisis for everybody who is old enough to maybe remember that. But the world economy pretty much collapsed on subprime mortgage crisis. And there was a lot of layoffs and panic in the market. And I got laid off in 2008. But in 2007, this idea kind of already started. And I have a good friend of mine and a travel partner from the 5 years from Germany. And he was kind of like instigated that and asked me if we want to do an online business. We wanted to have a business with say, an individual surf business, not like Quicksilver or Volcom, where it's just like a big company running. We wanted to have a rider-owned operated surf company, and we wanted to sell merchandise in Germany with brands that have a story to tell. So I sourced brands here on Maui from local shapers that we then can sell in Germany. That is like something like we called it at that time. It was called Mike Yucker Hawaii Individual Surfwear. That's what it was called.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. And then we did that. That was in 2007. And we pretty much went online with that whole thing as the world economy started to collapse.
Okay.
And, you know, tip-top timing. So I was jobless. We were on this business model didn't really work. It was all supposed to be clothing. And then somebody in a sports production really thought this was a really great idea, what we had. And he goes like, I can get you access to factory where you can make your own skateboard longboards. And so 2010, that ISPO, where the inception of the stand-up magazine, was also the turning point in our business, where we showcased skateboard longboards to the German market. And for the first time being able to have a quality product in a medium price segment. At the time, it was pretty much Sector 9 owned the market, and everything was like 250, 300 bucks for a skateboard longboard. And we were able to produce the same board for in the range of 100 and under 200, like put it to market 199, 179. So we were kind of like in that price segment, and it worked. And we got lucky with this. And I was able to make a living out of that.
Nice. So cool.
So that's how that kind of, that's how this, about other than that, yeah, I was just having a job here, surfing, living the dream.
Very cool. Very cool. And as you said, the magazine was just kind of a marketing tool for your product.
That was the idea. But little did I realize that once I was online with everything and I started, you know, like we started all the content here from the races. Then there was a bunch of pioneers in Germany that I reached out to, Austria, you know, like really the early guys. And I started making content with them. And this thing just became like, it started to grow legs on its own. Now, all of a sudden, my traffic on the website started to grow exponentially. And with me being here, participating in all these races and being really like, it was a passion of mine, like doing this because I love the sport. So I was just like, it really became another thing. And it just started to grow just on its own, you know. And then that's how also like a year after that, how the print magazine started to become a thing, because I realized there was no print magazine in German either. And I have a passion for good photography and telling stories. I like telling stories of people, interviews. And so there were certain things that like belong on a website and certain things that belong on a paper. And I was always inspired by the Surface Journal. If you're familiar with this magazine,
Yeah.
So I was very inspired by the Surface Journal and I wanted to do something like that. Tell timeless stories of the people that are in this sport. So comes 2011, I think, I made a little experimental brochure, contacted the people in the industry. Hey, do you want to help finance this? You want to do advertising? I want to do this. And so I put this together. I taught myself the InDesign and all the Adobe Creative Suite. And I put together a magazine, had it printed in Germany and delivered to the Pedal Expo in Nuremberg, just to see what the response was. And the response was good. And then from there on, I decided to make the budget, and the sport was never big enough, and the content was never enough to make a monthly magazine at the time. But I figured we're going to make maybe every 3 months or every 6 months. So it came to be a biannual thing. And I made my first magazine in 2012.
Like, how was that for you when the first printed magazine was there and you held it in your hands? Was that like a big thing? I guess bigger than the website, because it's something you can really hold in your hands.
Yeah, exactly. And that is such a good point, because really it feels Like, you know, like you have something, you know, like you have that haptic, if this is an English word, even you have something in your hand, you have a good paper, you know, I like to make a quality magazine. My magazine was never stapled. It was glued in the back, a little thicker, a little nicer paper. So you have you something really that gives value to the reader. Interestingly enough, I did this all from Hawaii. And so I was always the last one to actually see the printed version because it was all printed in Germany and I was over here. So I never had that. I rarely had the chance to be the first guy to have it in my hand.
Was it difficult for you? Because you were at the epicenter of the sport where it happened, the action happened, but not where production happens. Was that a problem sometimes?
You know, no, actually it isn't. Because thanks to the internet, it really doesn't matter if you send an email and a work order from a high rise from the fifth floor to the sixth floor, or if you send it around the world. It's like, it's the same. And that was never really a problem. I mean, the only thing is the time distance, like it's hard to call people because it's always 12 hours or 11 hours. Like you're at the sunset, it's morning for me. So it's always hard to get a hold of people. So I have to either get up super early or stay up late. So that was kind of like the challenging part. But everything happens via email, you proofread your stuff. No, it was actually, sometimes it's even an advantage because if I work with somebody, it never sleeps. When it's your night, I'm working. So if you and I were having some sort of a business, you go to sleep, I work while you sleep. And you sleep and you work while I sleep, and our company never sleeps because we're exactly 12 hours away from each other. So that always turned out to be a little bit of an advantage too.
That is super cool. And then you had the magazine for what, for 13, 14 years as a real magazine. And I think I saw, I don't know if it was a YouTube or an Instagram short or whatever, that you stopped doing print. When was that? Was that last year, this year?
Last year, there was only one magazine. And then this year, there was no more. There's no more money in this industry that would have supported the budget to print, let alone leave a little extra budget after all the costs are covered.
Because I felt like when I watched the video that it was really heartbreaking, kind of, because it felt like it was something that you really wanted to do and then couldn't do anymore. Was that hard for you to make that decision?
Well, you know, the decision didn't come overnight. I think the writing was on the wall. It did well up until COVID. And then during COVID, I'd actually, the first year I went back to the boat show after COVID, it was the best year I ever had, followed by then the worst year I ever had. And the pain in the industry became really clear, just like every other sporting good and kind of hardware product that went over, the whole market went over a cliff because of, you know, oversupply and overproduction and not enough demand. So it became clear after that boat show that it was good. But when I was teeing up myself for the next year, you could already tell. It was that year it went really well. That summer, this industry already started to suffer. It was already bad for the industry. And I came back to the boat show. And then it was already like, this is going to be hard. This might be difficult. The guys were booking, but then really people started to cancel their ads. Like I went back home with a good budget and 2 months later, I started to get cancellations, which I was kind of like, I'm kind of sort of had saw it coming a little bit, and I was able to make one magazine. And then I was kind of like, look, also, in all honesty, then I had to pull the plug because, you know, it the amount of hours that goes into this for something like that is tremendous. And frankly, it's not a money maker. Well, the magazine, it was covered the cost, and it left extra money that allowed me to travel to certain events to then produce more content. But this magazine never paid my bills in the house I'm living in.
Was that the skateboards or what was that?
That was mainly the skateboards. And even after 2010, I was able to work self-employed for about 2 years. Then we were kind of having a crisis and I went back full-time job. Yeah, something like that on the timeline. But anyway, since 2013, I've been holding a part-time, a casual position at a hotel because I've always been working hotel. I was a manager at a hotel. So I stay employed in a hotel as a casual person, kind of on call. So I always make ends meet with whatever comes in with the skateboards, the magazine, and balance that out with my hotel job.
So the hotel's kind of your backup, so to speak. All right, that's super cool, because I'm always interested, because I see you, and of course that's social media and YouTube, because I see you all over the world all the time. I'm like, how does he do that?
No,
but it's so interesting to actually see how it really works. So it's just super cool. Thank you for sharing.
I'm actually absolutely not all over the world, and definitely not all the time. I am once a year at the boat show over the last 10, 12 years. I used to go to the Battle of the Paddle because it was in California. So I always went there. When we had all the races here in Hawaii, of course, you know, I go all to all of that because that's in the neighborhood. But, and I had the highlight of everything was probably for me was when I had a paid trip to Tahiti to cover a waterman event in nice. Tahiti on Bora Bora for a whole week. And it was flight, hotel, everything was paid. That was probably the coolest thing. And after COVID, I had a commentator job for the ICF. But no, make no mistakes, I am definitely not traveling a lot. I am mostly here working on stuff. But yes, I was in Switzerland. I saw you. That was a family vacation with my daughter.
And the boat show, of course, but that was probably for your skateboards.
Exactly. That was always a great, great media partnership with them.
So cool. Let's talk about Hawaii and the races, because last week it was that race week. And maybe for all the listeners who are not familiar with that, and me as well, I'm going to take the maps a little closer. So you live on Maui, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to go through the maps here. And there were three races. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Can you maybe just... maybe go chronologically, first race, second race, third race, from where to where, and maybe you can and say if you did the race, not this year maybe, but maybe a couple of years ago, and yeah, what happened there, maybe a little coverage of what happened, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's a big thing. So number one, the first one is the Paddle Imua that started 14 years ago as an SCP race. It's a charity event. So there is a charity called Imua Family Services, which does a summer camp for kids with special needs. And this race is a fundraiser for that. So it's a very much a Maui community event, but during the SCP days, and because it was traditionally before, it was always in May, and now they moved it into July since after COVID. So this has always been attracting a lot of stand-up paddlers in the years before COVID. And then stand-up paddling started to die out, and then the Paddle Imua also kind of like lacked participation. And then we had the whole thing with foiling and wing foiling, and now we have para-wing. So it really invigorated the entire downwind scene again. There's people, and now anybody paddles OC1, there's guys on windsurfers, there's guys on six-man canoes, I mean, like anything paddles. And then the second race is the Maui to Molokai, with which I've been involved with also probably since almost the beginning, which also started as a stand-up paddle race across the channel, 27 miles from Maui to Molokai, always also drew massive participation before COVID. And the third race is of course, the legendary Molokai to Oahu, which already started in the 90s as a prone paddling race, which is the world championship for the prone paddlers, going 32 miles across the legendary Ivi Channel. And the history with that race is that in the early years of SUP, the protagonist, such like Archie Kalepa, was one of the very guy who pushed the boundaries in the very beginning. He's a Maui guy here. He was the head of lifeguards here on Maui. And he started to just show up at these races with his board. And like, okay, here I am, and I'm going to paddle along. And they're like, what the heck are you doing? This is a prone paddle race. This is not stand-up. But stand-up people started to push into this M2O. And I'd say from about... to 2009, 2010 on, the M2O really became a big thing in stand-up paddling. And I think by 2013, 2014, This was a full-on, full-blown SCP race that was the world was watching what happens at the M2O. It is the epicenter, the crown jewel, and the bucket list item for everybody to do the M2O. So those are the three races, and they were separate at the beginning. The Padlimua was sometimes in late May. Then we had, there was a lot of races on Maui other than the Padlimua. We had the Olukai, Olauea, was a big, big race. That topped out at 400 participants. And then we had then there was a paddleboard championship also. That changed names multiple times. So we had multiple races, but unfortunately, SUP started to die out in Hawaii. The races did not become interesting anymore to the organizers. It never was much of a moneymaker anyways. So those things went away, except for the M2M, the Padlimua, and the M2O. And if you want to go over to what's happening right now, so back in 2018, it was the first time guys started showing up with foiling. Actually, taking that back, in 2017, Army Armstrong showed up with a foil wanting to cross this thing, and they said, hell no, you're not going to do that.
Really?
Yep. And then it comes 2018, and they had to adapt to the new trend with foiling. And so there was just a handful of guys like Kai, Lenny, Finn Spencer, Army Armstrong. At the time, most got the big names in SCP like James Casey, and these guys were all still paddling SCP.
Okay.
They were still on SUPs. Comes 2019, more foilers show up. And then of course comes 2020, and boom, no races for 3 years. No M2O for 3 years. No M2M for 3 years. So 2020 shut down. 2021 shut down. 2022, the Molokai people were not really in the mood to have a race right away. And so we missed 3 years. But in those 3 years, SCP completely died out over here. And everybody, including myself, this was foiling. And then when 2023, we had the first race again, the floodgates just opened with foilers. It was insane, the amount of foilers that showed up to all three races. And then a big jump was like from into 22, I think from 2023 to 2024, we went from like maybe 25 foilers to over 100 foilers.
How many were there now, this year?
The M2M had 147 SCP foilers. And like men, sadly, the female participation is really lacking still at this time. And I just put out on the... probably about, there were like 8 SCP ladies who were doing it.
Okay.
So I actually just put out the numbers for the M2M, and yeah, it's 5% women.
Okay. Yeah, that's not enough.
No, that's not enough at all. So, but overall, there was roughly 200 people, because the M2M is also something all crafts. You know, there's guys in OCs. There was 5 guys on SUPs actually doing it.
Oh, really?
Amongst them, a 15-year-old here from Maui.
Oh, cool.
So, and there was being foilers. So, and at the M2O, it was somewhat over 100 sub-foilers. And then just sadly, only like five or six women.
Okay.
And about 30 foilers.
You did some of these crossings as well, right? But with a wing, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I did the M2M in 2014 and 2015 on a SUP.
With a SUP, yeah.
And in 2023, my daughter and I did it wing foiling, the M2M here.
How is that? I mean, I imagine huge waves, obviously. Do you need also like someone who rides beside you, security thing? I heard that it's super expensive to get someone to follow you with your gear or bring you back. Or how is that?
Yeah, so the M2M is, there's no escort boats required. It's relatively safe. That because my daughter at the time was 15, I was definitely a little nervous there, and I wanted to have an escort boat with her. So lucky, my buddy Zane Schweitzer here, he provided us with his dinghy. So I had an escort for my daughter. But, you know, in fact, I just did an interview with Candy Wild, and we were talking about these channel crossings. It's on YouTube. And he really said, there is no safer time to do a channel crossing than participating in one of those races. Because there's lots of boats, lots of people, and now everybody gets a tracker. There is cell phone reception across the channel. So it's really hard to get lost out there when you're with this many people. And yeah, of course, the waves was like the bigger the better.
Yeah, so cool. Nothing happened with you? No problem whatsoever during those crossings? You did?
Well, the SCP crossing, you can do that in any condition. When I did it on the 14-foot board, that was, you know, like just grinding for 5-6 hours and trying to catch bumps as much as I can and just keep paddling. With foiling now, you're definitely depending on the conditions. And when my daughter and I did it in 2023, we were a little bit, our hand wing was, I was on a 4 meter and my daughter was on a 3 meter, and we were definitely underpowered. And in the middle of the channel, we kind of really started struggling with the wind to the point where actually my daughter couldn't get back up on foil anymore.
Shit. Okay.
And so that kind of sucked for her, and she had to pull out of the race because we just couldn't get her up again. And I was struggling really hard across the channel. I kind of had to almost sail upwind to keep the power on the wing to make it across. And then luckily, like, once you're near shore and the wind comes around the corner, it speeds up with the mountain slope. So then I was able to catch enough wind. So I finished the race, but not in a very honorable time.
Right. Well, and you said a couple of days ago that you don't do the race anymore so you can cover it better. And I want to get into your YouTube channel maybe. And for those who don't know, it's Stand Up Magazine. And it's almost 3,000 subscribers. And as you said, you're everywhere. You're Mike with the mic, with this little mic, super cool. And you're asking anybody who's around, which I think is really cool. And how is that for you? If you go up to someone, are you still nervous? Or is it, no, you've done that for so many years, no problem, I'm gonna ask and film myself, that's no problem. How is that for you?
Well, you know, it's kind of like that. I started doing this a little bit like way back in the day, but unfortunately not enough. But I started doing this like at the Battle of the Paddle. But yeah, like in the first years, I mean, I just freshly started this, you know, I'm sitting in a paddle race and there's like, I'm sitting right next to Dave Coloma and, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, like you're kind of like, oh, wow, you know, like that's a somebody over here. Or we go to like back then the Waterman League a tour in what was always on Oahu, the world championship. But on one hand, you know, like I've been there for so long and I like SCP was so new. So all like, I mean, like when this whole thing started, like, I mean, like Kai, Connor, in those three guys here, they were just kids, you know, they were just like teenagers. And then the internationals came back then, you know, like there was French guys and like everybody came and I was just here you know, like, and I also feel like you can't take yourself too serious, particularly since we are in a sport where, you know, like it's not like freaking Hollywood celebrities, you know? So we're all part of the same tribe here. So no, I mean, like I've known these people all for so long and some people are new now and I've been there before them. So no, it's all cool. And we always have fun and everybody's happy. So no, all cool, all good.
That's cool. And they know you, obviously, because you've been there so long. Super interesting. But you think you're not going to do those crossings anymore, or are you going to go back?
Well, you know, like the next crossings were for me is to participate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's kind of like after 2023, I wanted to cover the race, but I also wanted to participate in it. But then I just kind of started to realize that, like, if I want to do this, if I want to have a good content and a good video and everything, I cannot participate. So I do the Paddle Imua always. I do the Paddle Imua and then my coverage is pretty low about that. I take my phone and I take some pictures of the guys, but I'm not doing a video on the Paddle Imua. But on the two big ones, I want to do a video and I want to be the first one to have a really good coverage of it. That really helps my channel and it helps, you know, it essentially helps my viewership and therefore it helps my advertisers and my customers, my clients. So for that it's work. This is work. So yes, do I rather do this? For sure, yes. I would be super cool to do the M2M. But the M2O, in all honesty, I don't think, I mean, it would be cool to do that. But as you mentioned, it is freaking expensive. An escort boat costs $1,000.
That's crazy.
So for me here on Maui to do this, if I did this properly, with a boat, and if I pay for everything, that's a $4,000 or $5,000 go out.
Oh, yeah,
and
now the people that come, that's a lot.
You know, and unfortunately, our industry is not big enough to make enough money to even have remotely this kind of money laying around to do that. This is everything is very low budget.
All right, I understand that. I want to get into your channel, if you don't mind. And you have, of course, these coverages that you talked about, but you also try these things yourselves. And now you said for you, it's important if you like interview someone that you know what you're talking about. And I loved your videos with the parrowing. I watched a lot from the earlier days as well. And first of all, I want to know, because what I mostly do is dock starting at the moment because there's not a lot of wind usually. And I saw you like jumping from a rock, super difficult conditions with a lot of waves and just this rock. Did you go?
You're breaking up.
Back to dock starting?
I have not.
Probably because you don't have to, because it's a lot of wind usually and waves, right?
Yeah. Number one, we don't have boat harbors. Our boat harbor here, there's no opportunity to do that. I did dock starting when I first started foiling. In 2020, the whole Lahaina Harbor was empty. There was like not many boats in there, and there was like no people around. And we were surfing there, and I went over to the harbor and I tried dock starting there a little bit, but I kind of got frustrated with it after a while. Then later on, I saw this rock nearby our house. Out at the point, and I was like, oh, let's go try this again. And you know, like, I like making fun videos and kind of like, you know, take things a little light and maybe not take it too serious. So I was like, there's no surf, there's nothing here, let's go try and see if we do a dock start there and make a video about it and see how it goes. And then at the time, Armstrong was also releasing a pump foil. And they sent me a pump foil. So I make a video, you know, like I get the gear from some companies, and then I'll make video with the gear, you know. That's also part of what I do.
All right, so cool. And then you tried the SUP foiling as well. How did that go for you? Because I'm struggling, man.
So yes, so then came the whole on the smaller boards, the boards changed to the downwind boards. And so they sent me a bunch of gear, and I went into that. And I'd say in the beginning, when you have it's hard with one of those soap bar style boards.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I never had a big one anyways. But then I got 121 liter, or like a 7.7 downwind board. And I was like, I got to go learn the flat water start. That's it. You know, like that's what I'm going to do now, because I really want a downwind foil, and downwind foiling is where it's at. That's the absolute best of the best. So I'm like, I need to learn how to downwind foil with a paddle, and I need to paddle up. So sure, I'll get the downwind, I get the pump foil, and I get that board. So I'm going to go try to flat water starts, which are mad hard. Okay. They are so hard. And then also this guy, a little older than your 20-year-old average. So I'm like, I'm huffing and puffing there, and I can't get this thing out of the water, not at the first try. So now I'm at the point where I'm like, I don't really need a flat water start. I mean, it's helpful for the if you go to downwinder. So I sub foil. I try to find the smallest wave I can. And those downwind boards are really good because they engage with the bump, and then you come out of the water. So I've been doing that. And so I go, and then, you know, like learning, doing a lot of pumping and stuff, and like probably like using like a 1080, a high aspect 1080 kind of foil to practice, and then work my way down. But I also have to admit that at this time, I lack the time to go and practice downwind foiling, because if I want to do a Moliko run, I have to drive an hour to the finish line and then find a driver to drive me up 20 minutes to the start. So this is a very hard logistical undertaking for me, because I don't live over on that side of the island. So to this point, I have not done a downwinder with a paddle.
But you've been using the parrowing lately and the plume, and I saw your first videos out. How is it going so far?
It's a kind of a double-edged sword for me. So first, and you can see this in the videos. The first couple of times, it was so hard, and this freaking thing was like entangling, and it was just a spaghetti mess, like hard.
And the camera doesn't help either, right? The camera
I tried to put it. Yeah, you want to film this? Yeah, exactly. You saw that. Yeah. So And I was really battling with stability. These things like, you know, like with a wing, with a regular wing, you can sheet in and sheet out. And you kind of can bring the power in. With a para wing, this thing is just there and it's like, oh, it rips on your hand. And then you try to get up. But, you know, it after a few tries, I can sail this thing in and out. I just have to, once again, I live on a side of the island where the wind is not 100% parallel to the shore. And it turns into like an offshore situation at the exit of a downwinder. And if I must first learn how to properly sail a parawing upwind before I go here on the west side of Maui. So sometime this week again, I will drive over to Konoha and continue practice and doing my walk of shames. And then eventually it will click. It always does.
Well, that's just what you have to do. You used to plume as well, I saw. It's super cool because you're really at the epicenter of what happens. And now I just saw today, I think, that BRM came out with this double skin parawing thing, which also looks really nice. Have you had the chance to try that yet?
No, I have not. And then here is like something that I kind of come out of the closet with. The only these things are expensive, and if it wasn't for my magazine, I could not afford to participate in this sport. So I can't go out and say like, oh, look, there's a new parawing, $800. Oh, look, there's a new this. Oh, yeah, look, there's a new that. Let's just buy it and go make a video with it. I can't do that. And that's not so. I'm really lucky. And thank you to Enzis and Carl, for example, for giving me one of their parawings so I can create content with their product and at the same time enjoy the sport as well. So that's kind of like where I am with this, that I get companies that support me and I can support them back with content.
Yeah,
so
I have not had the chance. It's super valuable what you do, really. It's entertaining.
Thank you.
And also it helps a lot because I'm on the journey on learning the parawing, the paddle, and it's cool to see that not everyone is a pro like Balz, like Gwen, like all the pros. So that's really cool to see other people struggling as well. That's what I'm trying to do myself as well. That's super cool.
Yeah,
so
that's cool.
Mike, what's next with you, with the magazine? What do you have planned for the next couple of months?
Well, the big season is actually kind of over right now. So I have a lot of more videos that I have to put out. I have an interview with Edo from the winner of the M2O. I have a really cool interview that I was able to catch with Kai Lenny over on Molokai that's going to come out here shortly. I need to continue my parawing journey. So I have a video coming out. I'm doing a video more because I got the Enzis, the Roger 2. So I'm learning with that. I have some videos with that. I have a starboard free wing that I'm working on a video. And then, it's everything is kind of going back to product videos, maybe some analysis and trying to reach out to companies here on Maui to see who wants to help and continue with promotion. That's really what I need right now is I need financial support. This industry is not doing well right now. It is very hard to find clients. And I am also being ramping up my hours at the hotel in order to make up for the lack of sales. So I've been working at the hotel quite more often than I have in the past years. And at the same time, I'm trying to find customers and reader support. I have a subscription system on the website voluntarily where I ask people, can you help support my work with maybe an annual subscription, 20 euro, maybe 30, 50 euros. It's voluntary. If that works, if I can get a budget out of this, awesome. If this doesn't work by the end of the year, I have to seriously consider doing a paywall. And you are not getting to my content, at least not what's on the website, unless you have a subscription. And I really have to see how this is financially still making sense. And over the next year, I will find out whether it does. And if it's not, I'm on the brink of getting a full-time job.
All right. That's what you have
so
to do,
that's,
right?
That's the reality. That's what you have to do. Yeah, and I will, and then if push comes to shove, like at the end, I will maybe just only do YouTube videos. I'll see. I really have to see it. All I'm kind of like at a cross. I'm a little bit at a crossroads right now.
So for all the listeners, the viewers who listen and watch this show, maybe you can just repeat the website. We're going to add it to the show notes so people can go and check it out. Can you just like repeat your Insta handle, your website?
Yeah. All you're going to do is go to Stand Up Magazine.
All right. And you'll find everything there. Thank you so much, Mike, for coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners or viewers?
I think we got the whole story, man.
All right. Super cool. Thank you very much, really, for coming on the show. For all the listeners and viewers, if you enjoyed this show, you can support me as well. There's a Patreon. You see the link in the description as well. Next episode is going to be with Patrick Federi. Super cool guy. He actually made an app for catching wakes at the Swiss lakes, which is super cool. He made some music as well for foiling. He's a very interesting guy, pump foiler. So yeah, make sure to subscribe to not miss that. Thank you very much, Mike, and have a good day. Yeah, I'm going to go to bed now.
Hello, everybody. thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
Cheers.